I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
Mostly people in Europe,
okay, right?
So team meetings at 7, and I'm feeling good about it. I'm just sitting there, and we're all on video.
Yeah.
And I had two separate people message me, and they're like, are you okay?
Oh, no.
Like, you don't seem your normal peppy self. I was like, something wrong with me? Then I start crushing. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I think I'm okay.
I think I'm all right.
Maybe I'm not.
Our guest today is Emmy Jacobson, a 2000 graduate earning her degree in aviation technology. A Colorado native whose family has called Littleton home for over a century, Emmy began flying at 16 and now holds her commercial multi-instrument ratings. She earned her MBA from Regis in 2007, a Women in Leadership certificate from Emory University, and has built an impressive career in aviation, including over two decades at Jeppesen, a Boeing company, and now serving as the commercial sales director at NavBlue, an Airbus company. When not jet-setting, Emmy is deeply invested in her communities. She has volunteered her time at MSU Denver for many years, mentoring and supporting students in the aviation department. She also served three terms as the PTO president, two as vice president, and is the hospitality chair for the Marching Band Booster Club at her daughter's school. Her leadership has not gone unnoticed. In 2025, she was named the MSU Denver Alumni Association's Volunteer of the Year, and just last spring, Emmy joined the MSU Denver Foundation Board. Emmy is an incredible example of servant leadership and a clear demonstration of the impact Roadrunners can have in their communities. Emmy, welcome to Bird Talk.
Thank you.
So you do a lot of things.
I do. Yes.
And you look great. You don't look tired at all.
Thank you.
What I love about this, too, is as we've met a couple times, and we'll talk at length about our good friend Charlie Walling, who made the formal introduction of us. I know we've met at a couple events and just recently at the foundation board meeting. But what I love is that you have covertly been attached to MSU Denver since about the time that you left. And we at the Alumni Association didn't even know. So walk us through. We've now such learned that you've been doing a ton of things in the Department of Aviation and really supporting those students. So walk us through a little bit of how that started, why you decided to stay connected, what was the pull there, and what are you doing for those students right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was a senior, there was a class, it was called Job Targeting at the time, with Professor Jeff Price. And we had to do these mock interviews. And at the time, it was people who weren't really in the industry. It was more of, I think, the career services folks at MSU came in and performed interviews on all of us students about to embark in the real world. So we were prepared. But then there was a camera in there as well. And so doing that experience, I was like, first of all, holy crap, this is really intimidating.
Right.
But then also, it was fun. It was such a great experience. And so once I graduated, and I was always in the area, stayed connected with Jeff Price throughout that time. And then when he started bringing in, you know, graduates, people in the industry to come in and conduct those interviews for the students, I was one of the first to sign up because it was incredibly valuable class for me.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated trying to give back. And plus, it's a great time to like connect with all my fellow graduates,
right,
all the people in the industry, and just have a really good, fun night.
Yeah.
I think torturing about these kids.
I know, right? Because it's still scary. And I'm sure, you know, in 99, 2000, it looked a lot different. It was probably a videotape, like you're saying, this way. Now we're preparing them for totally different types of interviews. But I think about the foresight in those early 2000s to say, hey, yes, our career services professionals totally wonderful at doing this. But there's going to be some really specific things, especially about a community like aviation, where there's probably different questions that are asked.
Yeah.
Right? And probably different ways that they're trying to get at different interests and different skill sets that you might have, how you handle pressure, how you handle anxiety, that type of stuff, that, gosh, that value of having someone in the industry being able to ask those questions was probably so much more impactful. And I think about the great foresight that our aviation department had to say, hey, actually, we could utilize some people that we have in this space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. It's been absolutely fantastic. It's actually one thing that I genuinely look forward to every semester is for that one night to come and connect with the students and with the community.
Yeah. And not to mention still having that hope of getting to see the young students.
Yeah.
I've been on campus about 12 years and I've taught here for about 8. And people always say like, oh gosh, teaching, that's got to be so hard to work into your schedule. And I was like, oh no, that's the thing I like doing more than my full-time job. I love my full-time job, but it's because you get back in the classroom and you're reminded like, oh no, there is a next generation of people that are so excited excited. And I always talk about the first day of classes, like where you see these kids wide-eyed and these young people that are like, no, we're going to make a difference and we're going to change it. And that fuels me. And so I imagine it's a very similar
opportunity. It is. It is. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of that first day, I know today is the new student orientation for the aerospace department. And in my previous employer, we would be a sponsor. And so I would come down every year, myself and a great colleague, former colleague and friend of mine, Tim Nave, we would come down and we would just be here and excited for all these students, you know, and they'd walk up just like, who are you guys?
Right. Like, why are you so excited?
Why are you here? Yeah. What do you do? So it's that excitement that just fuels me, right?
Yeah.
And just to be around young people. Like,
I know.
It's a lot of fun.
And I do genuinely believe that it makes a difference to them and their space. I mean, even our convocation ceremony is going to be this weekend. And so that's where we welcome all of our new incoming freshmen to say you're here and we're here to support you. And so we've been working with our student affairs team that runs that. But to make sure that we have alums there just to be able to say like, no, this is a big deal. And we're still excited about the choice we made, you know, and that presence, just to be able to look at somebody and say, you did this 20 something years ago, right?
Yeah.
And so, and you're still here and you're thriving and you're happy and you're excited. That makes a difference. Those subconscious things matter.
Yeah.
And so I think the work that you've been doing in that space has been super helpful,
thank
whether you.
You
feel it in the moment or not. There's a lot of people that hopefully I have on this podcast one day, they're like, no, there was this crazy, really excited lady that used to come to a new student orientation and she just pumped us up. And I was like, yeah, if she can do it, I can do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's been so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, I love the mock interviews. And there was actually one time I was doing the mock interviews and afterwards I pulled this student aside. I was like, I know this is not where you want to go. This is not your trajectory. But if you change your mind, here's my card.
Yeah.
Call me. We could use you.
Yeah.
And he ended up calling
cool.
He got a job over at Jeppesen and was there for, I think maybe like 10 years before he moved on to like pursue his actual dream.
Sure.
But it was awesome just to really connect. And it was a nice little recruiting.
Yeah. You got to think that pipeline is really good, especially in Denver being such an aviation strong community. And there's a lot of places you can end up, but to be able to be there as a representative of the institution, but also the employer that you're working for, there's some really good connections to be made.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was super fun.
So let's backtrack a little bit more. I just love that was, I always think it's great when we find out that alums are so engaged. Maybe it's not great to say it out loud because it makes me look bad at my job that I didn't know. But there's so many alums that are covertly just still engaging, and that's wonderful. That's the best bet. We didn't even have to ask you. Your relationship was clearly with the department, with your professor, and that's what we hear from a lot of our alums.
Yeah.
But if we go back 20 some odd years, why MSU Denver in the first place? You're from Littleton.
Yes.
Family's been there over 100 years, which is crazy. You are very much generationally Coloradan.
Absolutely.
What was it about MSU Denver?
So I, you know, started flying at 16. I knew I wanted to pursue that career track. I will say I took a slight detour my freshman year and went to a different MSU, Montana State University in Bozeman.
Sure.
Because I wanted just to get out from Littleton for just a brief moment.
Yeah.
I always knew I was coming back here.
Sure.
I knew that as soon as I went up there, I knew I was coming back here because this is what I wanted to do. But I knew it was here. It's an amazing, amazing school. The aviation department is phenomenal, right? And being here in Denver with, you know, United and Frontier, just a great avenue and pathway to get to those airlines, right? So that's why I chose it. And yeah, it's here in my backyard.
Yeah.
It was, I could live at home, save some money.
Yeah.
And yeah, just really good.
I'm always amazed when I meet people in their teenage years, even in their 20s and people in their 30s that like know what they wanted to do. I'm almost 43 next month and I have no idea what I want to be when I grow up. Like I have lucked into some really great and impactful roles that have really tied my passions and my skill sets with impact, which I think at the end of the day is really, if I had to answer the question of what do you want to do, it would probably just be make a difference. I don't care how, what that looks like. It's just one of those things and I need to be concrete and solid kind of in my personal values and making sure they're in alignment with what that impact and what that good is. When I hear somebody that's like, oh no, I started flying at 16 and I knew I wanted to work in this industry, it always is so mind-boggling to me. And so I think about that often, and especially you have a daughter, she's 14 years old. Like, does she know what she wants to do? And is that just something that's in your family? Is it in your genes or is it?
She waffles. I think for the most part, she's narrowed it down.
Yeah.
Right. She says she wants to be a marine biologist.
Awesome.
So I'm like, all right, I'll totally support that.
Turns out there's no ocean in Colorado, though.
Interestingly enough, when I was her age, like actually younger, I was obsessed with whales. I still love them. And I wanted to be a marine biologist. But it was that moment where I was like, I'd have to, there's no water here in Colorado. I'd have to move. It changed my trajectory, right? Aviation's always been in my family. My dad, you know, retired airline pilot here. He actually is a graduate from MSU as well.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Class of 73, I think.
Oh my gosh. So an original roadie.
He was a roadrunner. So she wants to be this marine biologist. I wanted to be a marine biologist, but we'll see how things change because she's starting to evolve. Like I drag her to like every aviation event. And she's starting to really find that it's kind of fun. At first, she dreaded it. She's like, oh, here we go, another airplane event with mom. But now, we just got back from Oshkosh, and she's like, oh, did you see the F-35? And I'm like, She's like, can I get a hat? You can get a hat. That's,
Sure can.
So,
That's very cool.
It's fun.
Well, and I have to imagine that the aviation community is pretty tight-knit. I mean, we've noticed it here in Denver, just auxiliarily being related to this institution. I'll be in places and like, oh, MSU Denver, the aviation program, and we've got this. And so, like, you see it here. And then, of course, our aerobatics teams and things that we talk a lot about, and we've gotten to know a lot of those competitors and those students just because we help fundraise for them when they go to nationals every year and win it every year, right? So there's pieces that I've touched on in this space, but I have to imagine it's a pretty small community.
And it is, so, and especially here because my dad, he got interested in high school. Back then, he went to Littleton High School. And back then, there was Dr. Ben Milspaugh who ran like this small aviation
club
there, you know, it was actually a class. And he's the one who inspired my dad to get into it, you know, in high school. And so that just kind of fueled my dad. So my dad knew early on, right, that this is the trajectory. But I think it might be aviation related. Like you just, you get that taste.
Well, you get a bug, right? There's, I think there's a few things out there where it's like, I mean, and imagine, I've never flown a plane. Obviously, I've been a passenger in large planes, but I imagine that feeling is probably unmatched from anything. Like when you get a taste of that, you're like, yep, gonna do that. So there's that little bit of adrenaline junkie, that little bit of like adventurism, the frontierism that is so inherent in us that it's probably hard to shake once you get a taste of it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that's what I grew up in. Right. And it's funny. I would tell this story because that was my norm is when I was really young, he was furloughed from United for a little bit and he was doing some charter work and delivery flights for Denver Beach, which was out at Old Stapleton. And there were times where I would go with him and fly on a King Air. I thought that was normal for kids to do. I didn't know any different. Yeah. And he also did flights for this Dr. Doc Bigelow, taking him and his flight nurse out to Kansas and coming back on Doc Bigelow's small aircraft. And again, I thought that was just normal.
Yeah.
I had it at the early age.
Not as exciting. My dad was a restaurant manager. And so I thought it was normal that kids got to like bus tables and hang out in the, you know, in the cooler and like play hide and seek. So my sister and I are about 18 months apart, and so we got into a lot of trouble because, like, one would dare somebody to do this, and I would do anything that my big sister said, right? And then we had my brother is 5 years younger than me, so then when we were probably 7 and 9 at this point where he's 2, so he's like a human. He can function. Then it was just like, oh, we have this baby prop that we can get to do all the things that we didn't before. So at this point in time, my dad worked at this cafeteria-style restaurant. He managed. It was called the Hollander Cafeteria. It was right in the middle of downtown Glendale, so a suburb outside of Los Angeles. And so it was right in the business area. So all the business people would just come at noon, and it was like pretty much cafeteria style dining, but elevated. So you just went down, got your tray, picked whatever you wanted. When you were done, you put your tray on this conveyor belt. We thought it was a great idea. Finally, we had a small enough person to put on the conveyor belt to see if he would make it all the way through. So we stuck our brother on the conveyor belt to see if he'd make it to the back Hobart, you know? And so like things that I thought were normal, a little bit less fun, a little bit more probably potentially dangerous. But I don't know if they're more potentially dangerous, probably being on a plane. But it is funny how there's so many times when you're just engrossed in the environment that you grew up in, you're just like, that's normal.
That's normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not.
There's just things that are so different. But I imagine, especially in that aviation space, once that is a norm for you, it'd probably be pretty hard to get away from that and not miss it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. But it's been amazing. It's, you know, kind of shaped my life.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. You have any siblings?
I do. I have an older brother and an older sister.
Okay. Are they at all obsessed with flying or in the aviation space at all?
I wouldn't say they're obsessed with flying. My sister is not, but she appreciates it.
Yeah.
You know, she'll come along to air shows and do all that
stuff. Well, who doesn't want to see an air show?
Right? My brother, a little bit more. He went and kind of did his own thing in the automotive industry for a little bit, but he recently got a job over at United and works in the training center now.
Very cool.
So it's...
So the bug bit everybody.
It did in their own way.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I love that so much of your story, even, you know, having graduated 25 years ago, has
Thanks
to do
for
with...
me feel
sorry.
Old.
That's right. I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. I usually go, you know, but it is what it is, right? We have to be proud of who we are in this... Perfect, you know, we're strong women in the middle age, right?
Absolutely.
And we're good.
Yep.
We're crushing it. But I love that so many of your memories are so specific to people. Like you mentioned Dr. Price.
Mm-hmm.
You even mentioned who started your dad's program. And I think that is something that as we've been doing this podcast for three seasons now, I've been here for 12 years. I've met thousands of alums. And the thing that I love so much about this institution, unlike other institutions, I have worked at other institutions. I've dealt with alums. When we talk about the impact that is felt from coming to MSU Denver from our alums, 9 times out of 10, it is because they name a faculty member or a very specific person or an advisor or some staff member, someone that helped them along the way and made that difference. And it was that connection. And I just love that it gets affirmed every time we're on this podcast because it is the people. It's the people that matter. The education's excellent. The opportunities are excellent. And aviation aerospace is uniquely excellent because we have our indoor airport, which we'll talk about, and some of the cool things that are in that space that is unique. But the reality is the people make such a difference. And I think we talk about it, but we talk about it internally. But I would love for this world to just know how great our people are here and how invested they are in the success of younger people, right? Yeah. You said it at the very beginning that you come back for these things because you get to meet these students. And that's an investment you're making as an alum. You don't have to make that. You're choosing to make that. But the faculty, our staff, the people on this campus are making that investment every day. And I'd love to hear that that was something that's really real to you.
Absolutely. It sure is. Yeah. You know, not even just like the aviation department here, but I had some incredible professors because I was a history minor.
Okay.
I loved some of these professors. Yeah. Two of them made an impact on me from like an educational standpoint. I can't remember their names, but I know exactly what they look like. Mm-hmm. I can hear their voices, right? And, you know, if I start hearing something about like the Kennedys, because there was a brief moment where I was obsessed with the Kennedy family.
Sure.
And we offered two classes, history classes about the Kennedys. And I can still hear this professor talking and he would put up his slides. They were just pieces of paper onto the chalkboard with a magnet. And I was like, I can still see it and visualize it. And I'm like, whoa. writing down, you know, what he said. But it was just amazing.
Yeah.
Those things really just resonate.
It is. It's when you have those impactful moments, they're hard to get away from, which I think is pretty great.
Yeah.
So 23 plus, almost 24 years with one company. We don't see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you made a change about a year and a half ago.
I did.
What prompted that? It sounds like a lot of changes because you were super PTO mom, did all the things. And then you were like, you know what? We're going to make some changes here. Your daughter's now in high school. So what does this next phase of life look like for you and kind of what sparked that?
That's a good question. So at my previous role, I loved it. Mm-hmm. I had this amazing kick-ass sales team and we were just awesome. Meeting our targets. We were just
clicking. Were you selling whole planes or pieces of planes?
No, we were selling services.
Okay.
Yeah, services. So like navigation information, flight planning, crewing solutions.
I was just picturing you like going door to door with like a suitcase of airplanes,
like
models. Like, which one would you like? No, I'm kidding. But that would have been awesome.
Yeah. So we were doing great. Mm-hmm. There was a point in time where like things just weren't as good as they were, right? And over time, you don't realize like, oh, it's just not fantastic anymore.
You get okay with the norm.
Yeah. And you don't see the outside perspective of, oh, you're not maybe being recognized for what you could truly do.
Sure.
So that was kind of my turning point. And so, I just started to see what else was out there.
Yeah.
And made the change. It's completely different working for a European company versus a U.S. corporation. But then, you know, being this super mom from like the PTO president, all of a sudden now I talk about my transition. Like a lot of stuff was very much based around my daughter, as it should be.
Yep,
you have kids,
correct.
Right?
Right.
But I had kids knowing that I wanted to be involved as much as I could, not just kind of be a sideline parent.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing all that, but then we got to middle school and there wasn't a lot for me to do in middle school. The PTO wasn't as strong. They weren't doing as many sort of events. So then I kind of stepped back and reassessed, like, maybe now is my time to go and do the things that I really enjoy doing. Yeah. And that's kind of where things went, you know? And yeah, now part of the foundation board.
Yeah, which we're so excited about.
Yeah, me too. And I've always been part of the Mile High chapter of the Women in Aviation organization here. Now I'm the scholarship chair. So I'm doing those things that really kind of fulfill me from a personal and a professional place.
Yeah.
But then, just recently I got reined into being the hospitality chair for the marching band because I was like, well, okay, you know, you need help.
Fine. All right. I can help.
I'll do it.
My mom was very similar for, I think, the years that we were mostly elementary school, like PTA nonstop. There was one year where she would do like the welcome back for all the teachers, like when they're setting up their classrooms. And she decided she was going to make these apples for all of them and deliver them. It was right down the street. We used to ride our bikes to school, you know. I just remember having to peel like 50 Granny Smith apples. Then she would boil them in this gigantic pot that had the red hot cinnamons that were melted in it.
Oh, yeah.
So it turns them into like a cinnamon apple. Oh, they were the most delicious thing on the planet. Then she'd core them and she would put like a cream cheese mixture in the center and then a pecan on the top. Tons of work, but I mean, and I don't know where moms, especially and dads that are, you know, that are that kind of where they come up with this time to do these things. But I just remember like we made 50 of these apples. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I appreciated it because I got to have so many of those core experiences with my mom. Like when we did our Madrigal Choir tour up the California coast, like my mom got to go. Most high schoolers are probably like, oh my God, your mom went. And I was like, oh, my mom was kind of cool. So it was cool that we could share that core experience together. But I do know that by the time we were all done with school, I think it was a little bit of a sigh of relief that my mom was like, okay, I cared about those things. I obviously care about my children, the children in our community, making sure that they have these great opportunities. But what do I actually want to do now that's maybe a little bit more aligned with who I was before,
right?
Before I was consumed with my children.
Yeah.
No, so I love that you're exploring that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But, you know, I don't want to lose sight of, you know, her
as well.
I have 4 years left.
Yeah, I know. It goes
and
so
I'm
fast
like,
too.
Mm-hmm. But it's, I want to be a part of it. And I really, truly enjoy doing things for other people, right? As the PTO president, I, you know, organized the daddy-daughter dance. I mean, we had like 300 girls coming to this thing, 250, 300 girls and their dads coming to this thing. And when I first took it over, like I saw the budget and I was like, holy mackerel, we spent that much money on this? Yeah. I was like, you paid $3 for a chocolate dip pretzel? I was like, I can make that for like 2 cents, you know? And so then I took all of that on. Like I was making all the stuff just because I wanted like our funds to go to other things other than a chocolate covered pretzel.
An artisan pretzel.
I took all those on, but you just find a way. But, you know, my dad was my PTO president.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I've had him to like kind of model that it's possible, right?
And I think that's so valuable. And I think it's understated a little bit too much probably in just in the world right now that the modeling portion is so important. And hopefully it's parents, but it can be grandparents. It can be community members. It can be your church that you're involved in. It can be your teachers in that space. But kids are very susceptible to what they see. And if they can see something as normal, like flying in a plane at 16 is normal, then that's going to be said as something that is not a barrier that as an adult, I have to think, oh God, can I do this? It's like, no, it's been done before. It can be done again. I say it to my mom all the time. We have these conversations every time. She's like, oh gosh, I think I'm going to change my job or I'm going to do this. I go, Mom, you can do anything for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And she'll always be like, why do you always say that? I go, because you can. Like, you can do anything for a short amount of time. It may not be great. You may not love it.
Right.
But, like, you can transition as long as you're committed to something. Like, you can go through whatever you need to go through in that time. And the funniest part for me is I'm always like, well, because, Mom, that's what you showed us. Like, and now you're just forgetting that, like, you can suffer through something or you can push through something or there can be pain and that doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. And that modeling is so important. And I love that you were able to kind of even see that. And especially as I think in our middle ages, I'm getting so much more retrospective of how I was raised and how grateful I am for the things my parents did and the communities that I was involved in. You can't talk about being a PTO president without them being like, no, my dad modeled that. And that's very cool.
Yeah, exactly. And getting, I'm not going to say suckered in being this band hospitality chair, but I spoke up, I volunteered, mm-hmm. you know, there was a need. But my mom, when I was in high school, I was in color guard. Mm-hmm. And she made
tall flags or a rifle?
Tall flags.
Okay.
So she was like the flag mom, mm-hmm. and she like sewed all of the flags right. for 2 consecutive years yeah. of all of our show flags. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, my mom can do it. Like, surely I can be hospitality.
Right. right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. So you've been around the marching band scene for a long time then.
I, you know, high school and yeah. now coming and now, back to it.
Yeah. yeah. Your daughter plays flute.
She does.
I
yes.
stalked you on the Instagrams. It sounds like you guys just take so many fun trips and do so many fun things. And I love that your daughter's by your side for all of it. To me, that is just fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it.
She's my ride or die. Yeah. yeah. yeah.
So I think about marching band a ton too, having been an athlete in high school and college. And I think that's what I love about those spaces is you're actually, especially marching band, you're bringing together musicians, athletes, sport fans, whatever the case might be, into one space. And there's very few other things that do that, where mm-hmm. you're getting people sitting in the stands that are like, oh, no, I'm here to support my child that's on color guard, or I'm here to support my child that's on band, or no, I'm here to support my son who's the quarterback,
yeah.
right? There's very few other things that can bring that diverse kind of interests into one space. And mm-hmm. so just my sidebar on why I love football games and marching bands.
Yeah. I mean, because if you're at a football game mm-hmm. and you don't hear the marching band like playing, it's
worse.
Not as energetic,
it's not.
Right?
It's
you're
not.
Just like, oh.
And if there's no cheerleaders, then it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Right? So no, I'm fully with you there.
Yeah. So I'm super excited to dive into this fall and have mm-hmm. the football games
yeah.
and see her, you yeah. know? I mean, her marching band's vastly different than what mine was.
Sure.
There's only 36
oh, really?
Kids. Yeah. I mean, wow. it's a 5A school, but yeah. only 36. We're calling this the rebuilding year.
Sure.
Right? We have the new band director. Mm-hmm. He's coming in. He has lots of great ideas, mm-hmm. but it's like, I just want her to have as much fun as I yeah. did, right?
Yeah. I have to wonder. So I'm the weird athlete in a very musical family. So my brother and sister, both classically trained opera performers, musical theater performers. My grandparents came here from Italy, opened a music shop, and just like sold and repaired any instrument you could possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. So like I was the weird kid that was like, I like throwing a ball. I mean, I can still sing and play guitar because you can't be a part of the Pedrini household if you're not doing something, because Christmas is like, everyone gather around the piano and now it's your solo and it's your solo. So like you had to do it, right? So fine. I am noticing more and more that as we're seeing less and less arts as a part of like core curriculum, that you're seeing less people do this. I also blame sports 100% because we have forced people to specialize in sports.
It's all in.
And yeah. financially, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, youth yeah. sports. I've talked about it on this podcast. People are probably gonna be like, stop talking about how you hate youth sports. I don't. Youth sports, everyone should play. And it is one of the most important
things. They should play multiple.
You can do
sports.
In my opinion, yeah. is to participate in some sort of sport, because it's yeah. going to teach you all sorts of things about winning, about losing, about trying, about failing. Realizing that sometimes you can do everything right and someone's just going to be better than you.
Yep.
Like, so you learn so many things that are valuable, but you don't need to be doing it in a hyper-competitive environment where your parents are paying $20,000 a year and you're an yeah. 8-year-old kid decked out in a uniform with your last name and your walk-up song. Like, nope.
Yeah.
I would love to just dismantle youth sports as an economic industry because it's so ridiculous. So I've been following the Little League World Series right now, because it's what's going on. And now it's on ESPN, which is crazy. And they've had to stop 3 different games for like different sign stealing stuff. I'm like, these are
wow.
10, 11, 12-year-old boys that are now in these sign stealing schemes and different things and coaches getting ready to throw down.
Yeah.
And so I think we've forced too many people to pick sports and pick the one sport. Go all in.
Yep.
The parents have to reinforce that because they're like, I'm paying $20,000 for you to play on this travel ball team.
Mm-hmm.
There's not time to go to art class or to go to music class or to participate in this other thing that you want. And
right.
so I feel like it's been this trickle-down effect that is starting to get beyond the sports scope, and it's starting to hurt the arts, which is, I think, one of the worst things that could possibly happen.
Yep.
And
yep.
that's what I think's wrong with America and me.
Well,
and that's
it.
Why I'm running for president. No, I'm kidding. But 36 people in a 5A school
yes.
on a band, that's a problem.
It is a problem.
Right?
I completely agree. And I mean, these kids are so talented.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went to the demo night after their 2 weeks of all-day band camp in order to get them prepared.
Yeah.
And these kids sounded
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm like sitting there like teary-eyed, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, they sound so good. But it's only 36 of
them.
But
yeah, you're three deep in every section. You don't have a full drum line, right?
No.
You're probably sitting with a couple snares and one bass.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, which you got to have at least like eight quads because that's half the fun is watching them do what they're doing.
Exactly.
Right?
But they're rocking it, you know, with what they have.
Yeah.
They're really just, they're killing it. And so I'm like super proud, but I'm like, where'd everybody go?
Yeah, you know? I know. And then I also get like introspective about it too, that I'm like the developmental positives of learning to play an instrument and using that part of your brain and digging into the emotions and the things that are there. We're robbing an entire young generation from that as well, which bums me out. So let's solve this.
Okay.
This is our new charge. We're going to make people musical again, and we're going to tell people that they should play all the sports. And then if they don't like it anymore, they can quit. That's okay.
It is.
We don't have to force you to do something because we're so financially invested in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know.
I'm with you.
Okay, that's my soapbox I'm on for the day. For the first time ever, you have the chance to leave your legacy on MSU Denver's campus. During the Roadrunners Rise campaign, you can make a gift to reserve an engraved brick that will be installed outside the brand new student housing building scheduled for completion in 2027. Your brick will cement your support and dedication to MSU Denver. Visit msudenverbricks.com/shop to start paving your legacy today. Calling all Roadrunners! MSU Denver is turning 60. That's right, since 1965, MSU Denver has provided high-quality, accessible education to over 115,000 Roadrunners. And during the 2025-2026 academic year, we want to celebrate our 60 years of excellence with you. Join your fellow Roadrunners at Homecoming 2025 this October. And whether you attend the 5th Annual Women of MSU Denver Alumni Networking event, celebrate with us at the annual tailgate party, or even run in the 5K, we want to celebrate our 60th anniversary with you. So visit msudenver.edu/homecoming for event details and to RSVP. This episode is brought to you by the best bird in the band, the trumpeter swan. Talked about you, why you chose MSU Denver, and it sounded like it was truly the option for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew about the aviation program. Your dad was here. What mm-hmm. else had you heard about it in the community? Was there anything else that was telling you, like, this is the place? If you want to be in that aerospace aviation space, this is where you go?
Well, like, back then, and I'm sure it is today. I don't know. I'm not a student, but it was the internships, right? Everybody wanted that coveted internship, you know, with, like, United or American. So that was, like, one thing that before I even started coming to MSU, I knew about those.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was the path you wanted to be on in order to make that jump into the airlines.
And I feel like aviation is one of those industries that maybe has stayed like that. Like, you still need to have kind of that path that you have to take. It's not like all of a sudden you can just be an influencer on the internet and end up at a pilot.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
You
know, like,
you still have to, you have to put in your hours, you have to get your degrees, you have to have your flight hours, you have to have your different trainings and certificates for all the things that you can do. Then you have to fly this type of aircraft.
It's an investment, like time and money.
It is. And you have to go up a ladder, right? You can't jump to this.
You can't just jump. Yeah,
so the value of those relationships that the university has been so thoughtful about creating with those partners really is immeasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still very partnered up with United. Sure, there's other ones that I don't know, but I know that those still exist. And to me, that we're really trying to create industry ready and equipped young people that have critical thinking skills, that got this bachelor's degree, which is valuable for all the intangible things that you learn in that space. But then it's also very specific about the skill sets that you're learning and the knowledge that you're walking out with. And now we're helping you to get to that space.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like we're doing it right.
Yep. I completely agree. You know, back then it was the internships. There weren't like necessarily the pathways that are today. Right. And there weren't official sponsorships or whatever. But today there's more formal relationships between, you know, MSU Denver and United.
Yeah.
That is huge.
Yeah.
Right?
Not to mention we're putting our alums in those organizations.
Yes.
And we talk about, we got 114,000 Roadrunners.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 90,000 of them live within 20 miles of where we're sitting,
right,
which is crazy. That means that they're working in these places in which we're trying to do that. So those, I mean, even you coming back to do things from Jepson and handing someone a business card saying, call me if you kind of think you want to do sales.
Yeah.
Those relationships exist in all those places. So whether they are solidified, like ours with United, or or they're more informal because we have alums that work at this space.
Yep.
Those are doors that are opening that mm-hmm. is half the battle of getting a job anymore.
Yep. Yep. I agree. Yeah. And that's part of the fun of coming back on those interview nights, right? Yeah. The mock interviews is seeing those people, the people that I graduated with that are incredibly successful over at United, right? Then they're coming back here to give back, and they're bringing like the United hiring team as well to come and help and really give those kids the experience that they need.
And
they're not kids, they're students.
They're students. I know. You know? I do it all the time too. There should just be a disclaimer at the start of this podcast that I will refer to all college students as kids, even though some of them are my age. Right.
Yeah.
It's a bad habit I've fallen into.
Yeah.
So your degree specifically is in aviation technology. Now, mm-hmm. I know there's a handful of programs that are in that aerospace and aviation department. What specifically is aviation technology? Were you going to get flight times? Were you learning about?
Okay. Professional pilot, okay. I think is what it used to be called a long time ago. Okay. But yeah, it's the professional pilot.
And so with that, what I've learned over time, because as we've been in partnership with the aviation department to help fundraise for a lot of the needs, because mm-hmm. we know there's a pilot shortage currently, there's also a cliff because mm-hmm. pilots, rightfully so, you have a limit for age for how long you can fly. Because no one wants my dad or my mom flying a plane, right? And so there's this cliff that we're going to fall off of where we're going to lose a lot of our pilot workforce. And so we've been really intentional about starting that conversation, having it so people are aware, and showing how MSU Denver can be a solution to that problem.
Yep.
But what I've learned through this process is that not only are our students who are in a degree like professional pilot, aviation technology, anything that's getting a pilot licensure, you're paying your bachelor's degree tuition just like every other student,
mm-hmm.
but then you have to pay for flight time.
Mm-hmm.
It is an unbelievable challenge and burden that is put on this industry and the prospective students that are joining that industry to say, hey, in addition to this, now you got to worry about getting hundreds of flight times in different types of machines, right? You start mm-hmm. with a single engine and you go to double. Then if you want to do airline, we're talking tons of flight time in this space. And so one of the things that I love that we've done here is we've mitigated some of those costs, because you also got to remember, how do you get flight times in a plane that costs fuel and you have to store it in a hangar and you have to do all of the things that come with owning an aircraft. We have our indoor airport. Mm-hmm. And so was that around when you were here too?
Yes, it was.
So walk me through this. It's one of my favorite things to see and I take people there as often as I can.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it. You know, I remember Babette Andre was one of my instructors.
See, you know the name, right?
I do. And, you know, it was fun. I think I was doing the sim class my first semester here. And I'd already had my instrument rating at the time, but we were in there and I got paired up with a student, Shane Plansberg. I remember mm-hmm. him as well. And it was just so much fun, like going in there and we were flying a DME ARC, and him and I just so stupid. It was, you know, at the time, a DME ARC was a little more challenging sometimes, mm-hmm. right? You had to stay along like 13 miles from mm-hmm. this one point, you know, coming into your final approach fix. Like, he was nailing it. Mm-hmm. And me just being me, I was like, I came up with a song. I was like, you're arcing. Yes, indeed, you're arcing. By the way, you're arcing. And then he was like, yeah. And he's like, look at me. And we totally blew past the final approach course because we were so excited that we were nailing this DME arc, you know, as a team. I was like, oh, I guess we just failed.
But we wrote a great jam. That is a bop, fun. I tell you. That's too funny.
Yeah.
So that's the one you started on. Eventually, I know we have a handful of different types mm-hmm. of simulators that are in there. So if you don't know, our World Indoor Airport, it was the largest. I think it still is the largest. Maybe. Yes. I'm getting a nod here. Largest. So with the most amount of simulators, I mean, there's dozens in there. And it starts with the single engine. And it goes all the way up to, we have two CRJs, which are like your jets where you, and I've never gotten to sit in it, but I've got to stand behind it while I've had students demo it. It is about as close to reality as you can possibly mm-hmm. get, where you've got the takeoffs and you've got the landings, you've got the missing the landings. I mean, what a safe way for students to be able to learn to deal with systems, whatever might be happening in that space. And they get to do it on campus, which is what I appreciate, because we're also then mm-hmm. cognizant of their travel time of getting to either the Broomfield or the Centennial Airport or all the things that would need to happen, let alone the costs of owning an airplane, which are substantial.
Oh, and I would have loved to have had the CRJs.
Yeah.
Oh, back then. That would have been amazing.
I bet you could probably ask.
We had the 1900s, which was cool.
You could probably ask nicely and get a little, I know. Get a taste of it.
Yeah. There was also, we had the DC-10, the old United DC-10 mm-hmm. simulator that like was always a work in progress.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just fun to watch it and see it there. And I mean, it's exciting to see.
Yeah, it's right? Very cool. But you can't do all of your hours in the simulators, no. Right? Some still have to correct. Be in air.
Oh, yeah.
But I do love that our institution is finding ways to try and mitigate how bad that those costs could be, how long it could take with all the solutions we've
put. And the World Indoor Airport's a fantastic mm-hmm. opportunity yeah. for that, right? Because, I mean, you can go rent a simulator over at BJC mm-hmm. or Centennial, mm-hmm. but you have to pay to rent it, and then you have to pay for your instructor as well. Whereas here, you know, it's part of your curriculum, and you have your instructor here, so and you get to log that time.
I know.
So it's such a fantastic way to help students mitigate that.
Yeah.
Because it is. It's so costly.
Yeah. So are you still active in your pilot licenses? Can you still
go?
No. Nope. Just worked real hard. And then I was like, I'm good. I did it. So my grandma, during World War II, she joined the Navy. It was a special unit of women. So the Waves. That's okay. what it was. I didn't know her very well. She was just really... standoffish sounds rude. It wasn't rude. She was just really, you know.
Reserved.
Reserved. That's exactly the word I'm looking for. Like, not a lot of hugs, a lot of love, like all that there, but just very reserved. And I think it was a testament to kind of that generation, too. They'd mm-hmm. seen a lot of stuff. And I didn't even really know that about her till when she passed, and it was in an obituary. And I asked my dad, and I was like, what? Like, grandma was in the Navy? Was that even a thing? Could women? And he's like, oh, well, I was doing this. And somehow around, she must have been stationed on some base that had a bunch of planes and whatever. And it, like, fired up this passion for her to love planes. Aww. And so she got her solo pilot's license. And I was like, how do I not know any of these things? I often think about that, where it's like, no, there's so many things that I think we do because, like, there's something that sparks at us. We have that bug to be like, that's really cool. But then I think she was also terrified enough that she was like, I don't need to do that again, you know, because I can't imagine that's for everybody, right?
Right.
And even I joked with our president, Dr. Davidson, one time she was in a simulator with one of our students, and I was like, well, you still have your license, right? She's like, oh, no. No, I don't anymore. And so I could see how it's something that lapses, but I don't think you lose the skill set.
No. And, you know, for me, there was something that I wanted, right? And mm-hmm. but the timing of when I entered the market mm-hmm. didn't work out, right? I graduated in December of 2000 and was building my flight time. Mm-hmm. You know, I had friends that were getting hired on at Great Lakes with like 350 hours, right? Wow. It was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. So I was mm-hmm. like hustling to build up my flight time to get to like the 350 so mm-hmm. I could apply. Then 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
Nobody was going anywhere.
Yep.
So I was like, well, shoot. Okay. That stinks. Well, and at the time I was working at the Denver Jet Center at Centennial Airport, just parking airplanes. I was the follow me girl, mm-hmm. worked the desk, loved it. It was one of my favorite jobs ever. But then it's like, well, okay, now what am I going to do while I'm waiting this out? Because mm-hmm. nobody's going to be getting hired for quite some time.
Right.
And that's when I went over to Jeppesen. I started working there and mm-hmm. I kept flying a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I found that I actually really loved this aspect of aviation.
Yeah.
And so I call it my alternate, right? Mm-hmm. When you're a pilot, you have your destination, then you always have your alternate. I was like, it's not where I intended to go.
Yeah.
But this is where I ended up. And I actually really like it. I'm really good at it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it happened to go.
Yeah.
You know, my dad is a part owner in a 182 over at Centennial. So I'll just mm-hmm. go up and bop around with him.
Yeah, yeah.
On occasion.
Because that's normal.
Because that's normal. You know, it's just what you do.
Play around with your dad, right? That's normal.
I know. I've got my daughter with me and she's just like, this is normal.
This is cool.
It's not where I intended to be, but I found something that I really, truly care about and I'm passionate about. And I'm good at it.
So it makes such a difference when
it's
so much easier to love what you do when you're good at it.
Yeah.
Find the thing you care about and just double down in it. If you're good at it and you like it, you're going to want to work harder at it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're going to be successful.
You are. Yeah. I know. It's true. Yeah. Great. We've solved everything today.
I know. I love it.
It's pretty incredible.
It's a good day.
It is. So one of the things that I love about your story is I've heard your name for a very long time, I think even before we met. And I know we met at the RISE event.
Right.
And then obviously we were just at the Foundation Board meeting. And I feel like we met maybe at a Mud Club before too, because you are a member of our Mud Club. But it's always because Charlie Walling. And if you don't know Charlie, I can't imagine anybody listening to this doesn't know Charlie.
Exactly.
I can't imagine anyone in Denver doesn't know Charlie. Charlie somehow came across you. And so then when I kind of asked that question, I was like, no, but Charlie, like, you keep trying to introduce me to Emmy. Great. Awesome. And I know she's in aviation and she's great and she's wonderful and she's alum and all the things he says about you. But I go, how'd you meet her? And it ends up that your partner, Chris, met him at an airport bar, which to me is about as Charlie Walling as you can get. Like, it is the perfect story. I'm like, okay, I'm done. But like the full circle of life has happened because most of the people that Charlie have introduced to us and most of the things that Charlie gets excited about have something to do with a beer, right? Which is what I appreciate. So you met Charlie through Chris,
your partner.
Mm-hmm. And then because Charlie sat at a bar and was just talking about MSU Denver.
Yeah.
Which also I love. I mean, he's a member of our foundation board. That is one of the charges, is to talk about the cool work we do here. Charlie is great at doing that. And so having a beer, saying, oh, I'm a foundation board member at MSU Denver. And then Chris says, oh, well, Emmy went to MSU Denver. And then the two of you meet.
Yes.
How many tugs on your arm did Charlie have to get you to say, hey?
Not very many, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I was in that spot in my life where I was wanting to do more.
Mm-hmm.
And my partner, Chris, he knows what my aspirations are.
Yeah.
And he's probably one of my biggest like advocates.
Champions,
and champions. And so I think him and Charlie were like scheming in the background of like devising. I just sit there picturing them like drinking beers, you know, like, this is how it's going to go down.
She's not going to know.
She's not going to know what's coming. And she can say no.
Yeah.
But that's what I picture. That's how it happened. But, you know, once Charlie asked, I was like, hell yeah.
I'm in.
I am in. There was no reservation at all. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it came from there, right?
Yeah.
And it's just been evolving ever since.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've been really intentional. And I'll tell our vice president, Christine Marcus-Hudson, has been so good at being so intentional about building that foundation board to represent multiple industries, to, you know, you name it. Like, I've been here 12 years before Christine was here. Had a handful of VPs before that. And the board was always a little bit of a struggle to determine exactly, like, how are we going to deploy them and for what?
Right.
As we really have grown up as a fundraising shop and have developed funding priorities and finding ways that we can support the institution in their greatest needs and greatest efforts, we've realized that we need to have representation of the industries for which our university is most well known and are doing the amount of work that needs the support from the financial side. And we saw a big gap in our foundation board leadership in the aviation space. And so when Charlie came forward and said, hey, I have this gal, Emma Jacobson, like, you got to meet her, all this stuff. What we learned real quickly is not only do we get the benefit of you in person and the work that you're going to do as you, but we get the benefit of the network that you have meticulously created in the last 25 years. Because we talked about it. It's a small community in aviation. You've been a part of Jeppesen for 23 plus years, now a part of NavBlue, Airbus. I would have to imagine that we're tapping into kind of a well of expertise and those relationships that you've built. Because one of the things I have learned about you is that you are as genuine and pretty much willing to serve in all the capacities and all the places that we talked about in even PTO and stuff, right? And so now when we get Emmy, we also get the fingers that have gone out and touched the rest of the aerospace community. And I have to imagine that is a very big asset for our university.
Mm-hmm. No, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, that aviation network, it started with Chris and Charlie at that bar at the airport at 10 a.m. You know, they started talking about Metro, and then Chris is like, oh, well, I just met these people, Gary and Kara Moore. And, you know, their plane is in Emmy's dad's hangar. And Charlie's like, oh, those are my neighbors, right? And their three sons, you know, went to Metro and all this other stuff. So it's that network of people. I mean, it started here.
Yeah.
I mean, my aviation network started here at Metro.
Mm-hmm.
It has expanded beyond that and going over to Jeppesen and moving into the account management and the sales side. Holy moly, was it expanded right? I mean, I was working with airlines across the globe.
Yeah.
And you still have that network. Even before, like, LinkedIn was really cool, you know, and like a way to connect with people. I was connected with people around the world.
Yeah, you had to Rolodex.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. And it's funny because my daughter, wherever we go in the world, she's like, you're going to know somebody.
Yeah.
Because it's that small aviation community.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's the small aviation community here in Denver.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. But you draw on people, you know, you draw on each other to help out with certain things and you build upon that. You know, I help out with a lot of the commemorative Air Force stuff at BJC,
And it's just, I'm not part of the commemorative Air Force, but they put on these events and, you know, Dan Callender will call, hey, Emmy, would you come and do this? And well, yeah, of course I'll come and do that, right? And part of my work from Jeppesen led me over to one of my accounts there for a long time was Southwest Airlines. And they put on these youth aviation days here in Denver. And, you know, Brandy, who was running it at the time, she's like, all right, so I kind of need some help. And I was like, boom, boom, boom. You got your people here. You know, oh, you want an airplane? I got the airplane. You need a place for it? We got it, you know? And that's really what it's about, is that community and that broader reach and helping each other to make this amazing industry even that much better.
It's incredible. And I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, but I'm just going to give you affirmations for a moment, because having that mindset and being so community focused and servant leadership focused, I mean, that is a vein that has ran through everything we've talked about today. And doing it while being truthful and having integrity. And so that it's this idea that the value that you bring to any organization that you're touching is pretty tremendous. And right now, we're getting the best of that, I think, at MSU Denver, with your continued relationship with the Department of Aviation and Aerospace and in that whole space, what you're doing with those students. But now we're getting to kind of double down on that with the Foundation Board. Man, are we lucky to tap into all the things that you're bringing, because the credibility and the reputation that clearly you've made across everyone that you've touched in the industry, whether it's our local community aviation industry or this global one, it's proof in the pudding, right? They're not reaching out to you if they don't trust you, if they don't believe in you. You're following through on those promises. And I feel like we are such at the perfect time that while you wanted to start doing some stuff for you, gosh, is MSU Denver going to be getting the best from you. So thank you. That's really cool.
I feel like the lucky one, to be honest. This is just amazing community to be part of. I'm like getting teary-eyed here.
It's amazing. It's okay. It's not a video podcast. We're good.
It's an amazing community.
It is.
And I think part of the reason why I really enjoy my job is because it was fostered here at MSU, these connections within the aviation industry, like getting out there and meeting people and connecting people. I mean, I like to help people solve problems. And this is fun for me, because it really is often about, oh, you're talking this, but I know somebody over here, here it comes, you know, like I'm going to introduce that. And that's what I can bring to MSU, right? On the Foundation Board as well. I'm the lucky one. So I'm incredibly blessed.
Yeah. Well, it's like I just sold you on the Foundation Board, but it turns out you're already on it. So you're good. You're like, no, Jamie, I care about this institution.
I believe.
I'm here. I believe. We need to come up with who was it, Justin Bieber, what did he call his fandom? The Beliebers. We have a student intern in the room. Thank God we have a student, because we're too old to know what it was. We need some sort of MSU Denver affiliated idea of like a Belieber. I always call us the Roadies. And so that could be good. This is it. And everyone needs to get on board. And it's going to start with our 1.3 million viewers for this podcast.
Just as much like
T-Swift got. Yeah, she broke the internet. World. I know.
It's going to be great. It's awesome.
Okay, so then we're going to finish up with our rapid fire questions.
Perfect.
So we ask all of our guests these three questions.
Yes.
So we'll start with the first one. What is your favorite MSU Denver memory?
All right, so it's part of the World Indoor Airport. My good friend Roxanne, she was doing a work study in the little office there. And I would always go in and hang out with her if I had some time off or whatever. And we would often order Domino's pizza to that little office. And it was always a pepperoni, bell pepper, and mushroom pizza. And we would just sit in there and we'd talk and we'd eat pizza.
And so she was getting paid to talk and eat pizza.
Yeah. And then until one day her supervisor came in and was like, who are you? It's like, oh, I'm just here. She's just here. Like, you shouldn't be here. I was like, but I've been here all year.
Where have you been? I've been here all year. That is awesome. And they delivered right to the I love it. I love that they had no idea you'd been there.
Like, well, the whole time.
I'm like, I guess I'll leave.
Well, I guess we've got like a week left of the semester, so I'll see you outside.
That's awesome. All right. Second question. What does it mean to you to be a Roadrunner?
Pride.
Yeah.
Immense pride.
Yeah.
I'm incredibly proud of this institution and the way that it has connected the community and a lot of the first generation graduates, which is super amazing. Yeah. Just really I'm really proud of what MSU has done and what we're continuing to do.
Yeah, I agree. All right, last one. If you could put a billboard on campus with a piece of advice for all students to see, what would it say?
Probably say, slow down, take it in. From my personal experience, I was on this mission to get done with school as quickly as possible because I wanted to get out and fly, right?
Sure.
And so I graduated in 3.5 years. You know, I didn't save any money by graduating 3.5 years. It's the same amount of credits that I had to pay for.
Yeah.
But I feel that I missed some stuff, right? A lot of the campus activities, the organizations, all of those type of things that I'm like so active in now.
Yeah.
But I feel like I missed those back then. So it would probably just be slow down and take it in.
It's so funny. When we're young, we just want to grow up so fast. And then when we're grown up-ish, it's just like, oh no, milk it.
Yeah.
Yep. Enjoy the things, get involved in all the spaces. So I love that you're overcompensating for it now, being overly involved in all the things. But I do think that that's really awesome. And it's great advice. So we should all be road walkers for a little bit.
Exactly. I like it. Yeah, we'll just modify it a little bit.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is great. And I love that we get to make fun of Charlie Walling. And maybe when we're not being recorded, I'll tell you about how my wife punched him in the face. I mean, this was so awesome. Thanks for taking
Well, thank you.
Morning off.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, roadies.